And I'll say, Michelle, if you would, turn the fan on to low for me. Thank you. Sorry about that, everybody, but happy Sabbath to everyone. I know you're like me. It is a blessing. Even though I'm retired, I do get busy during the week. It is a blessing for this Sabbath of rest, the Sabbath day of rest to be upon us. And we give praise and glory to our Elohim and unto his son, Yahshua HaMashiach, for creating this great day of rest, which we know has so many significant consequences, future consequences for the world, blessings for the world that people don't even know about. Even people that reject the Sabbath day, who say that it's been done away with, they do not realize that it still remains as a blessing unto them. So on their behalf, we will say thank you, Elohim, for this day, knowing that it is going to be a blessing unto all men. So we have all been very blessed, to discuss a variety of these things, and we know the Sabbath and other subjects within Elohim's word, and yet we each should know that we're only scratching the surface of that part that we've been given. And you all might recall, not too long ago, I repeated a lesson on the trees of Elohim, which will we become? That was lesson number 142. And in recent years, I've heard some very interesting thoughts from others who purport themselves to be members of the household of faith. And y'all know I don't judge anyone who is or isn't as such. However, the scripture teaches us the following in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15. Matthew 7, 15 through 20, where it reads, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits." We should, as we look at the politics of today. If we were following scripture, we would certainly know who the false prophets are today, because we would know them by their fruits. They tell you their fruits right in your faces. It says, "Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit." Maybe we don't know what good fruit is anymore. "But a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit. Neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them." Now, I believe these verses are not given their adequate consequence by the members of the household of faith. We attend the appointed times of Yahweh, and we seem to believe that that is enough, regardless of what version we tend to partake of. Because at the same time, we offer spiritual thoughts that are borderline, totally unreasonable. And since the last Feast of Tabernacles, and I think I mentioned this before, one of the brethren that were at the feast with us, he asserted that each of the days of creation week were 24-hour time periods. And he asserted this in very, very strong terms, yet without looking at the big picture. We were talking about the big picture earlier in politics. Every member of the household of faith should be familiar with the Apostle Paul's admonishment in Ephesians, the sixth chapter. Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 10 through 13. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 13, where he says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might." Now, have no doubt, brothers and sisters, we are encouraged to be strong in Yahshua and in the power of his might. This has been encouraged of man from the very beginning of creation. The question is, however, how do we as man, this man created to exist for a while on this earth, full of flesh, how do we be strong in Yahshua? Well, the apostle answers that question for us. Verse 11, "Put on the whole armor of Elohim, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." He says for us to put on this whole armor of Elohim so that we can stand. And what is the armor of Elohim? I should say, what is the whole armor of Elohim? The apostle teaches us in verses 14 through 18. I'm not going to read those tonight. You can read those on your own. Verses 14 through 18 of this same chapter of Ephesians, that it is the truth, which is the breastplate of righteousness. It is the gospel of peace. It is the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, and most importantly, the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of Elohim. That's that whole armor. These all represent the full armor of Elohim. And we have always needed these things because of the following. Verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. So we're looking at the person. It's the same thing we're talking about. We don't look at the system. We don't look at what's behind them. But against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of Elohim, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. With that understanding, on this Sabbath night, let's discuss a very important thought process that each of us must continually confront. So let's ask the question of lesson number 159. Wow. Are we sure of the tree or trees from which we are eating? Again, lesson number 159. Are we sure of the tree or trees from which we're eating? And I tell you, I changed the title of this a couple times today before coming up with that title, and I think it's the appropriate title for this lesson, as you all shall see. So Yahshua offers the warning to us to beware of false prophets, which come to us in sheep's clothing. Have we truly confronted the issue of the potential false prophets in our lives and in the midst of the household of faith? Let's go to Matthew, familiar verse, 24 and 24. Matthew 24 and 24, where it reads, for there shall arise Hamashiachs, Christ, and false prophets, and shall shew great signs and wonders, insomuch that, if it was possible, they shall deceive the very elect. So a lot of people are going to stand up saying that they are Christ, the Hamashiach. And these false prophets are going to show a lot of stuff. We have been warned of the presence of those who will lead us astray. They will portray themselves as if they are Hamashiachs and prophets in order to deceive the very elect. And the elect are those chosen of Elohim unto Yahshua. So this is not just the man on the corner here. Look at 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, where it says, but there were false prophets also among the people, even as there should be false teachers among you, talking about the elect, talking about the church, the called out ones, who privily shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that brought them. And how do you deny the Lord? You don't follow his word, and you teach against his word. That's how you deny him. And bring upon themselves swift destruction, and many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And how is evil spoken of? Well, if you speak against something that you know is obvious in the word of Elohim, and you speak against it, saying, no, you don't have to do this, don't do that. Guess what, people? That's speaking evil of the truth. These false prophets shall be accompanied by false teachers among us, whom many will follow. So why am I reading about false prophets and false teachers? Yahshua said, beware of them, of these false prophets. They are amongst us. It is the duty of each person who sincerely believe they have repented and been baptized in the name of Yahshua to discern their surroundings, and even more importantly, to discern their own fruit. They themselves grow and feed to the brethren, that it is full of the vitamins that is found only in Elohim's word, as given to those drawn, called, and chosen through the protocol established by Elohim from the very beginning. In fact, discerning whether or not our own fruit is good fruit is essential. As we do this, we must remember certain required protocols that began in the beginning and have never waned through the totality of the part we have been given, even the word of Elohim. So let's go to the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 8. Isaiah chapter 55, verses 8 through 12. Isaiah 55, 8 through 12, where it says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither your ways my ways, says who? Yahweh. But as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Now, when I myself repented and was baptized, I was incredibly excited to join what I thought was this unusual group of persons who had chosen to walk in the same direction, with the goal of getting to the kingdom of Elohim through the growth in Elohim's word only. However, at times I believe we forget this important protocol. Yahweh's thoughts are not our thoughts. They're his thoughts. His ways are not our, they're his ways, and they're higher than our ways, just as his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Look at verse 10. For as the rain cometh down and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth." Now, this is Yahweh talking. "It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper whereto I sent it." Some deep words. Just as we visually see the effect of his rain upon the earth causing the growth of life-sustaining food, his word goes forth from his mouth to accomplish his pleasure, prospering where he sends it. And what the household of faith should, without hesitation, totally agree upon is the protocol by which his word goes forth out of his mouth. We must be careful not to interfere with our own thoughts, that we do not measure up to his thoughts, or speak our own words that do not measure up to his words. This next verse has amazing implications about this protocol. Look at verse 12. "But ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands." If we're walking in his words, joyful should we be. We're being led forth with peace. And then he said that the mountains and the hills shall break forth before us into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Who then are these trees of the field who shall clap their hands? Are these the trees we see that grow the physical fruit that nourishes our physical bodies? Are these the brothers and sisters we studied about in lesson number 142, knowing that we all become some form of tree, whether it's a good tree or a bad tree? Yahshua gave us much to understand this. Let's go to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. I'm going to read verses 24 and 25 initially. Matthew chapter 13, verses 24 through 25. It says, "Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is like unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares amongst the wheat, and went his way." This is why we must continuously discern our sources. Once the seed is sown, trees will develop in the field. However, the enemy of this man sowed tares in the midst of these, that also shall grow into trees. Drop down to verse 36. And he says, "Then Yahshua sent the multitude away and went into it, the house, and his disciples came unto him, saying, Declare unto us the parable." And that's make known unto us this parable of the tares of the field. "And he answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man." So that was Yahshua himself. He sows good seed. "The field is the world, so he sowed the good seed unto the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom." That's the household of faith. "But the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil," the liar. The liar, right? Who is leading this country by lies right now? We know the source, right? "The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. These verses teach us so much from Elohim's word. We now know that the field is the world. We know that Yahshua, then the Son of Man, he sowed the good seed. And being that every member of the household of faith should be totally understanding of who Yahshua was in the beginning of creation, we know that he first sowed this good seed to Adam, which we're going to take another look at shortly. But pay close attention to these tares. They are sown in the midst of the good seed, and they are sown by Satan the serpent. As we shall see, this has been so since the beginning, which is why it is so important that we wrestle, that we understand that we wrestle not against flesh and blood. But spiritual forces and weakness, from which our only protection is the whole armor of Elohim. But first, let's look at a couple of parables offered by Yahshua. Let's go to Luke chapter 15, verses 4 through 6. Luke chapter 15, verses 4 through 6, where he says, "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth forth his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost." This happens to us in so many ways, whether we're shepherds or even searching for lost items around the house. Our joy is great when we find the lost items. Remember earlier we read where the trees in this field, they clap when his word comes back, not void. Verse 7. I said through 6, but actually I'm going just a little bit further. It's like I'm going down through verse 10. Verse 7. "I say unto you that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 persons which need no repentance." This is lessons for us today. Well, he is telling us how wonderful he and the hosts of heaven are when one sinner repents, more than of those who need no repentance. Verse 8, "Either what woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, does not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it? And when she has found it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I had lost." This simply continues the thought pattern of her rejoicing when the lost peace is found. And then he says this in verse 10. "Likewise I say unto you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of Elohim over one sinner that repenteth." So the bottom line is that his angels are joyful over one sinner that repented. Yahweh said that the trees of the field shall clap their hands when his word prospers and does not come back to him void. And sure enough, the trees of the field can be those who receive the good word and walk in it. However, we know through study that Elohim has presented his word on a basis of dualism right from the beginning. And right from the beginning, man has failed to identify the spiritual forces that he wrestles with. If we see the process, when we are drawn to him, meaning Yahshua, by the Father, he then calls us. We repent and are baptized into him. These trees are clapping. The angels are joyful. So who are these trees of the field? We must understand this dualism that has always been present. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. We're going to be in Genesis for a while. For right now, we're going to do Genesis chapter 2, verses 4 through 9. But we're going to be jumping around in Genesis for a little while. Genesis 2 and 4 says, "These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth, when they were created, in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens, and every plant of the field before it was in the earth, in every herb before it grew. For Yahweh Elohim had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. And Yahweh Elohim formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man did what? He became a living soul. So here in the beginning of the creation of this earth and heavens, there were plants and herbs both in the field. We now know that this field was the world as it existed at that time. It was also called a field because they were yet to grow, because there was no rain upon the earth. They had yet to be watered. Verse 8, and Yahweh Elohim planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. So now we see Yahweh planted something else, a garden in Eden. This garden was planted also in the field, and yet it is described a little different than the plants and the herbs. Verse 9, and out of the ground made Yahweh Elohim to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. Tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge, of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, look at the result of Yahweh planting this garden. He caused every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food to grow, and also the tree of life in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. These descriptions form what we shall see with the first of the many great metaphors in Elohim's word. Before Elohim allowed man to eat animals from meat, all that mankind ate was from the ground. What are we seeing here? What we are seeing here is that this included the obvious for the physical food, the plants and the herbs. And now we see these trees that are pleasant to the sight and good for food. Well, what food? So we have these trees in the garden, not the plants of the earth, plants and herbs planted in the field, but in the Garden of Eden, along with the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in their midst. Now, even though there are some in the household of faith who may be uncertain of this, each of us, I believe, rather, are satisfied about the identity of these two trees planted in the midst of the garden. We know conclusively that the tree of life is metaphorically presented throughout Elohim's word as none other than Yahweh himself. I think I got a scripture later on that's going to show that a little clearer. I'm not going to go into it very deeply, but just one or two scriptures maybe. But this other tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, continues to be thought by many in the household of faith as being a literal physical tree. Some even proclaim that it was an apple tree. So far, we have read of the plants and herbs planted in the field, needing water, and mankind to till them. There is no biblical record here, however, of these trees in this garden needing the rain in order for them to grow. At the same time, these trees were pleasant to the sight and good for food. If these were not the physical plants and herbs, then what in the heck were they? Earlier, we read these words about these plants and herbs. Genesis 1:29. And Elohim said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which there is fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you shall it be for meat. This is an obvious reference to the plants and herbs in the field that needed the rains in order to grow. The distinction was made when Elohim said that these were trees which fruit yielded seed. Obviously, someone can easily say that those trees in the garden that were pleasant to the sight and good for the food might also be for physical food. But remember, these trees are pleasant to the sight. There is no evidence that these needed the rain in order to grow, nor that their fruit yielded physical seed. Notice what we learn after the man and woman are punished for their disobedience. Jump over to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 22. Genesis verses 3, 22 through 24. 3:22, Genesis. And Yahweh Elohim said, behold, the man has become as one of us, no good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand and also take up the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, Yahweh Elohim sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. He gave us a big clue, didn't he, when he said he will take of the tree of life and eat and live forever. We're not going into that tonight, but we know what Yahshua said about himself. If you eat of him, of his body, you are going to live forever. We know this. Now, notice this very carefully. This was because of the man's disobedience. It was because that the man chose not to be what he was created to be, the head of his family, which at that time was just he and his wife. He was sent forth from the garden. Had he been allowed to remain, he would have had direct access to take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Now, what we in the household of faith must also acknowledge is that Elohim's word did not deny the man's access to those other trees in the garden that were pleasant to the sight and good for food. Now, with this background, we have now read in Elohim's word, we should be able to identify these trees, pleasant to the sight and good for food. The prophet Isaiah wrote of Yahweh saying that all of the trees of the field shall clap their hands. What should be obvious is that the field in which the plants and herbs were planted is a different area than the part of the field that contains trees that shall clap their hands. And remember, why they shall clap their hands is because that the word of Yahweh does not come back void. This is a different kind of food. The man was told the following. Genesis 2:15-17. And Yahweh Elohim took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and keep it. And Yahweh Elohim commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely. He said, of every tree of the garden. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou shalt eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. So there's only one tree he couldn't eat of. We need to clearly understand what we're being taught. The man was allowed to eat of every tree of the garden, except for this tree. What does this say to us? He was allowed to eat of all those trees that were pleasant to the sight and good for food, as well as directly from the tree of life. However, he was commanded to not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because in the day he ate of that tree, he shall surely die. And let's remember another fact given to us. Go flip over to Genesis 3 and 2. As I said, I'm going to flip back and forth in Genesis. Genesis 3 and 2. And it looks like I'm going to read down through verse 7. Genesis 3:2-7. And the woman said unto the serpent, remember it started out by talking about how subtle that this serpent was of all, all the creatures. We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. Remember, it is Yahshua who sows the good seed. He had done so with the man Adam. Obviously, Adam had fulfilled his responsibility to feed the woman as the head of his family. The woman knew that she could not eat of all the trees in the garden, including that she could, rather, eat of all the trees of the garden, including the tree of life, except the one forbidden tree. Verse 4, and the serpent said unto the woman, you shall not surely die. Now, we have what was officially the first lie found in the creation. As the serpent told the woman, she would not surely die. This is how Satan became the father of lies and began spreading the fruit of lies. Verse 5, for Elohim doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. We mix it in with a little truth. Now we have another interesting statement to discern. The serpent now tells the woman that by eating of the tree, her eyes shall be opened. Did the woman know that she was talking to the forbidden tree at this point? Believe it or not, this should be our question in modernity, as well as many of us seem to be caught up in the teachings of the spiritual advices of other sources, other than what we know to be the word of Elohim. Adam had been told that the other trees in the garden that Yahweh said were pleasant to the sight and good for food. Prior to the woman being deceived by the serpent, had either she or Adam eaten of these other trees that were pleasant to the eyes? Look at verse 6. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired, make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her and did eat. Now, this is not in my notes, but if we notice here what it says very carefully, it says that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree to be desired to make one wise. Oh, how did this tree make one wise? It lied. She took of the fruit thereof. It mixed in lie with some truth. And she did eat. And gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. So this shows women the importance of their roles in these earthly families that should be patterned in the likeness of the family of Elohim. Here, Eve fed her husband fruit from one of the trees in the garden. I always will wonder with amazement how that any member of the household of faith fails to understand the nature of these other trees in the Garden of Eden. Eve was created as a full-grown woman, not a little girl. Adam had given her the same instructions that Yahweh had given him. One of the points we must realize here is that the man had direct access to the tree of life, meaning he had direct access to Yahweh Elohim. Here the serpent coerces the woman into believing that that her eating of the forbidden tree would not cause her to die, but would open her eyes and cause her to be as gods, knowing good and evil. This is interesting because she knew that she wasn't to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And here was the serpent saying that she would now know good and evil. A lot happened as she ate of this tree. It was good for food and pleasant to the eyes. This is what Yahweh said of the other trees. So we're seeing that the serpent presented the tree of the knowledge of good and evil as though it was one of the permitted trees of the garden. And it appears obvious that the woman had not yet eaten of one of those trees because she doesn't appear to know what was pleasant to her eyes. But what about the man? Verse 7, and the eyes of them both were opened. And they knew that they were naked, and sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. So it was only after they both had eaten of this forbidden tree that we learned that the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked. Now, what does this say to your and my comprehension? Doesn't this imply that prior to eating of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, their eyes had not yet been opened? They did not know that they were naked. However, we need to remember that the man had been given permission to eat of those other trees of the garden, which we were told were pleasant to the sight. Doesn't it appear reasonable that he had already eaten of some of those other trees? He would have clearer sight to know that he was naked? Well, perhaps this is not talking so much about physical sight. Now, this is just a thought. But the spiritual sight, or perhaps his perception of what it meant to be naked. What am I saying, you might ask? Is it possible that the man knew that they had no clothes on, but did not consider it to be nakedness? In essence, it was their perception that had not yet been opened. It is possible the man had eaten of those other trees. And let's remember, Yahweh told the prophet Isaiah that these are the trees that are joyful when Yahweh's word does not come back void. These trees clap their hands. This is just another clue as to the identity of those trees that were in the garden that were pleasant to Adam's sight his spiritual sight, and good for food, spiritual food. These were Yahweh's spiritual beings, his ministering spirits, his angels. The serpent knew that the man would recognize that he was a fraud. Talking about the state, that the serpent was a fraud. It would not be as easy to deceive the man because the man had direct access to the tree of life as well as those other trees. However, the man allowed himself to be persuaded by his wife and did eat of the fruit of the forbidden tree. And now his eyes were open to the knowledge of good and evil. Okay, so good, evil. Oh, I'm not wearing clothes. Ooh, that's evil. I got to cover up now. Up until that time, his nakedness may have been irrelevant. And I welcome any thoughts on that. But this is how I'm seeing it. Everything was good. Remember, the food from all those other trees was good, not evil. Only one that had the evil was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He knew good and evil. And with these actions, we now know the following. Romans chapter 5 and verse 12, one verse. Romans chapter 5 and verse 12 says, wherefore, as by one man entered into the world, and sin, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. Now, we all know the scripture of how sin entered into the world by Adam. But remember, this is even though it was the woman who transgressed first. Go to 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14. 1 Timothy 2 and 14, where it says, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Yes, the woman transgressed first. However, the responsibility had been given to the man as the head of the family. It was because of his transgression that sin entered into the world. All of this that we have read shows in just a little more detail the craftiness of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And perhaps we see why Elohim developed a protocol that came into existence upon Adam's transgression and that continues even until today in modernity. Adam was driven out of the garden so that he would not have direct access to the tree of life. The tree of life was and is Yahshua, well, Yahweh slash Yahshua. We know this because the tree of life was surrounded by the cherubim after Adam's sin. Let's look briefly at 1 Samuel. This is in several places throughout the Old Covenant, but we just read just one of them. 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 4, where it says, so the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh of hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophem and Phinehas, there with the Ark of the Covenant of Elohim. Now, it's not in my notes, but understand the dualism here. The Ark of the Covenant represented Yahweh, and the cherubim surrounded the Ark. But we know also that the cherubim, he exists, he himself exists between the cherubim. So the Ark was just a sort of carving or picture of what actually existed with Yahweh of hosts. These cherubims always surrounded the tree of life, Yahweh. This is why the cherub angel Gabriel said the following to Yochanan the Baptist's father in Luke chapter 1, 18 and 19. He said, and Zacharias, Yochanan's father, said unto the angel, whereby shall I know this? Why am I an old man, and my wife shall be well stricken in years? Talking about having a child. And the angel answered and said to him, I am Gabriel that stand in the presence of Elohim, and I'm sent to speak unto thee and to shew thee these glad tidings. At that time, it was before the birth of Yahshua, HaMashiach. Elohim was Yahshua, the Father, and Yahweh, who became the Son. Yahweh said that his words would not return void. Adam took away the direct access to Yahweh, and now Yahweh was using one of the chief angels to deliver two very important messages, one to Zacharias and later one to Mary, the mother of HaMashiach. While there are apparent exceptions, Yahweh's protocol shifted to engage the use of those other trees that clap their hands to carry forth his words to man. Let's repeat something that we read earlier, Isaiah 55 and 11. Just Isaiah 55 and 11, where he said, "So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper whereto I send it." Yahweh's word now goes forth from his mouth. We now know how this happens. It is given to these ministering spirits that were there in the garden that were pleasant to the sight and good for food. They bring Yahweh's word to those whom Yahshua of Elohim, the Father, draws to Yahweh of Elohim, now Yahshua HaMashiach. Yahshua HaMashiach then gives it to his ministering spirits, who gives it to his chosen called out ones. And yet, as did happen in the beginning, there is confusion about whether or not we are eating from the correct trees. Eve was confused enough to convince Adam, and we know the consequences. Today in modernity, I've heard many points of interest discussed by those who appear to be of the household of faith. Since we're talking about the beginning, you may remember the disagreement I have with the brother in the faith that I have feasted with for over 25 years about each day of creation week being a 24-hour period of time. This is where we must put on the whole armor of Elohim, relying only in it for our defense. The prophet wrote to us that Yahweh's ways were not our ways. His thoughts are above our thoughts. And yet, through his prophets and his apostles, he has given us plenty of bits and pieces to begin to understand his ways and his thinking. Adam should have known that the food he was being fed by his wife was faulty, because it did not agree with what Yahweh Elohim had instructed him. Well, what about these 24-hour days during creation week? After creating all that Yahweh created, we know the following happened. Look at Genesis chapter 2, 1 through 3. Genesis chapter 2, 1 through 3. Where it reads, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day Elohim ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And Elohim blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which Elohim created and made." Why did Elohim need to rest in the first place? He rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. Now, if the first 6 days were mere 24-hour time periods, this seventh day must also have been a 24-hour time period. That would mean that Adam and Eve, who were created on the sixth day, thus they were only a day old when Elohim rested on the seventh day. And I wonder, where does the flood fit? I guess it had to be after the seventh day, if you think like that, because we know for a fact that the flood was 1,600 years after the birth of Adam. Yahweh has given us this information in his word. He's given to us for a reason. His word informs us that those who walk with Elohim continue to look forward to a certain day. Go to Hebrews 4. Chapter 4, 4 through 9. Hebrews chapter 4, 4 through 9. Where it says, "For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and Elohim did rest on the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limited a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. But Yahshua had given them rest, then would he not afterwards have spoken of another day? So there remaineth, therefore, a rest to the people of Elohim." And we know that word rest right here is sabbatismos, meaning Sabbath day rest, talking about the seventh day. We now know through the writings of Yahweh's prophets and Yahshua's apostles that this future seventh day is a 1,000-year time period when Yahshua shall rule this earth, this field, with his saints. Yahshua made it plain through his apostle the following, 2 Peter 3:8-9. 2 Peter 3:8-9, where he said, "But beloved, be not ignorant." So if we are members of the household of faith, we are not supposed to be ignorant, particularly of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years. He said, don't be ignorant of this, y'all. And 1,000 years is one day. Do not be ignorant. It obviously has some serious importance to the plan of Elohim. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to us, not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. The only question for each member of the household of faith is whether or not we believe in what we've been provided. You see, as we decide of the validity of the trees from which we are eating, we must also decide on what we believe to be the word of Elohim. We must decide on whether Yahshua and Yahweh are indeed the same person. We must decide on whether or not we believe the following. Remember Yochanan chapter 6 and verse 63. Yochanan 6 and 63. For those listening who might not understand, we're talking about John 6 and 63. It is the spirit that quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, a spirit in our life. These words were spoken by Yahshua to those disciples whom Elohim's word proclaims became Yahshua's apostles. Today, many proclaim themselves to be apostles and add to and subtract from Elohim's word. I heard one such lady minister say that she was a prophetess, and so she could change Elohim's word. I couldn't believe I heard her say. I think that was the last time I ever went to see her. And she's on the south side of Chicago, over on, 100 and... I don't know what street that is, but you all know who I'm talking about, I'm sure. However, Yahshua spoke these words only to his apostles, of which we now know that he also proclaimed another important protocol. Yochanan 17:20. And you know I'm a repeating teacher, and I do it for a reason, so that we will have it etched in our minds when we go out and teach others. Yochanan 17:20, one verse. Neither pray I for these alone, he was talking about the disciples, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. That's what he prayed for, just these two groups, people. That was it. By the words of this prayer, we now have an additional protocol. Remember, in the beginning, Adam had direct access to Yahweh before listening to his wife. Now we're learning how that Yahweh came into his own, the children of Israel, and chose 12 disciples to assist him in sowing the good seed. Now the gospel of the kingdom to others whom Father Elohim would draw unto him. If we, the so-called household of faith, do not accept this protocol, which trees are we eating from? The Apostle Peter was clear in his teaching. One day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. Brothers and sisters, Yahweh, through his prophet, told us his thoughts and ways are not the same as ours. When will this register to us? If we know that Yahshua and his saints shall reign this field for 1,000 years, and that this is the Sabbath day that the Apostle Paul taught us of in the book of Hebrews, where did this teaching of 24-hour days of creation come from? It is not in Elohim's word. We have learned this from Elohim's word. Go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 through 19. Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 through 19. Where it says, "And Elohim said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And Elohim made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. stars also. And Elohim set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And Elohim saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were what? The fourth day. So the word of Elohim plainly proclaims that the light of the sun and moon of this field, the world, called the earth, was created on the fourth day of creation as a guide for who? For man. They are a guide for signs and seasons, which we know are appointed times, for days and years applicable to man's life in this field of creation. They are not a guide for Yahweh. These are for our ways, our thoughts. However, when we seek to understand how Elohim thinks, we must accept what we have been provided in the word of Elohim. It is by the apostle given the keys of the kingdom that we now know that in Elohim's way of thinking, a day is 1,000 years. Even our human reasoning, if we are being led by the Spirit of Truth, should discern that if man's concept of a 24-hour day was not given until the fourth day of creation week, this concept has no bearing upon these days of creation. What the example of Adam and his wife have shown us all is that the chosen of Elohim have a great responsibility in the plan of Elohim. It was by Adam's transgression that sin and death came into the world. He made a great mistake. Why are we being called in the first place? Well, once again, it was the apostle given the keys of the kingdom that answers this question. Let's look at 2 Peter 1 and 3. 2 Peter 1 and 3. 2 Peter 1 and 3. Where he says, according as his divine power has given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness, through the knowledge of him that has called us to glory and virtue. Called us to glory and virtue. Virtue is from the Greek word arete, A-R-E-T-E, which means praise and moral excellence. We were called to this and glory. We were called to moral excellence and glory. To accomplish this, Yahshua himself spoke to us through his teaching, his words to those chosen disciples. Look at Yochanan 15 and verse 1. Yochanan 15 and verses 1 through 12. Yochanan 15 verses 1 through 12. Where it says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purges it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Remember that at some point in time, he stopped purging the original church, the children of Israel. Verse 3, now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. He's saying this to his apostles, these disciples. We must bear fruit. But whose fruit must we bear? It is the word which he gave unto these disciples. Verse 4. Abide in me, and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine. No more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abides in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. Adam was invited to do what he is commanding these disciples and us to do, abide in him. Adam was to abide in Yahweh and his word. We are to abide in Yahshua and his word, as he proclaimed to his disciples and prophets. But he himself gave preeminence to the words of these disciples. So he prayed for them and those who come to him through them, through their words, who became his apostles to the household of faith. Verse 6, if a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and in my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified. Remember, we're called to glory, that ye may bear much fruit. So shall my so shall ye be my disciples. We were called to glory, and as we abide in Yeshua's words, as given to us by his chosen disciples and apostles, the Father is glorified. Verse 9, as the Father hath loved me, so I have loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in this love. Father, the Son in the church, the husband and the wife. Dualism, spiritual dualism. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy may remain in you, that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Are these designated trees the trees that each of us are eating from? Or are we being sidetracked by other trees that may not be pleasant to our sight or good for food? Today the field is reeling to and fro. All called out to the household of faith have a commanded mandate to bear fruit from the tree of life. Are we doing so? Have you taken a clear picture of the state of the field lately? And even more importantly, have you taken a picture of the people who, based on their history, must be the descendants of Israel? Where is the fruit? Oh, boy. There are congregations of the Hebrew Israelites that teach the following. Number one, Enoch still lives today because he never died. Number two, the instructions by HaMashiach to his disciples to wash one another's feet at Passover, as he gave them the example, was not commandments that were meant for the members of these congregations. Number three, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, only the bread is required to be removed from these followers' homes. So only the bread, not the leaven. But it's the leaven that is the sin. So if you only remove the bread, the leaven still remains. The sin still remains. Number four, only the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles and the eighth day must be kept by these memberships, where the commandment was clearly to keep the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days. There is no dispute with that. A valid question must be asked. Does the word of Elohim include these teachings? If not, this would mean that this fruit comes not from the trees that are pleasant to the sight and good for food. The question for each member of the household of faith is whether or not we're eating of the fruit from the trees that teach these or other doctrines that cannot be read in Elohim's word. What are we convicted of? And from what are the sources that have us so convicted? In this world of disinformation, how do we ensure that we are receiving the proper nutrition? Well, the prophet Isaiah was led to teach us this that we have read many times before in Isaiah 8:11. We're going to read down to verse 19, 8:11 through 19, where it says, "But Yahweh spake thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of his people, saying, say ye not a confederacy to all to whom this people shall say a confederacy. Neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid." That's a message to us. Is this message not applicable to the children of Israel in modernity? It is applicable, and I agree with some of what the Hebrew Israelite pastors teach about the darkness in the world because of the children of Israel abdicating their calling by eating from all the wrong trees in their midst. Verse 13, sanctify Yahweh of hosts himself. Let him be your fear and him your dread, and he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel. They abdicated their commissions for a gin and for a snare to the inhabitants of Yerushalayim. Does the household of faith know that when Yahshua HaMashiach is sanctified, so too is Yahweh of hosts? When we do so, he is our sanctuary, but he is a stumbling block and a rock of offense to the children of Israel. And that's why, in verse 15, it says, "And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken." Verse 16, "Bind up the testimony and seal the law among my disciples." this is a scripture that I have not heard any of those Hebrew Israelites ever read or discuss. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples. This process continues, but each of us must be sure to understand that this must be our trees of choice that we must accept in order to sanctify Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh has bound the testimony and sealed the law amongst his disciples, known to us as his apostles. Verse 17, and I will wait upon Yahweh that hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. And behold, I and the children whom Yahweh has given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel from Yahweh of hosts. Oh, so he gave some to Isaiah. He called them to stumble, fall, and be broken, snared, and taken. And when they shall say unto you, verse 19, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep and that mutter, should not a people seek unto their own, unto their Elohim, for the living to the dead? The prophet is telling us who he will wait upon. What about us? The children of Israel of modernity are seeking familiar spirits by indulging in physical and spiritual practices that are taking them further away from Yahweh than ever before. Many of our women are openly and yet deceptively seeking to destroy the manly image created by Yahshua himself. And remember how the tree of the knowledge of good and evil has accomplished this through treachery. The organization known as Black Lives Matter includes this language in their beliefs. And I quote, we are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. If you don't know what cisgender privilege is, that is being born in the body of a woman and thus accepting that you are a woman, or being born in the body of a man and thus accepting that you are a man. That's cisgender. And uplift black trans folks, especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. We build a space that affirms black women and is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. So the very family that Yahweh created they are building a space that women are free of it. It says, we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. So they weren't comfortable before. Before you. We foster a queer, affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather, the belief that all in the world are heterosexual, unless he, she, or they disclose otherwise. So this is the movement that has come to prominence amongst the children of Israel of modernity by mixing this seed with the following. Black Lives Matter began as a call to action in response to state-sanctioned violence and anti-black racism. Our intention from the very beginning was to connect black people from all over the world who have shared a desire for justice to act together in their communities. The impetus for that commitment was and still is the rampant and deliberate violence inflicted on us by the state. That's how they started out, and then they shift gears. This quote is one that practically all of modernity's children of Israel should follow, that last one. They should follow that. However, one of the problems with the household of faith in modernity is our failure to put on their whole armor. How many children of Israel have read the entire slate of beliefs of this organization and others? And once we have, Have we asked whether or not the entire slate comes from those trees that are pleasant to our sight and good for food? Elohim declared the following in Genesis chapter 1, 27 and 28. He said, so Elohim created man in his image, in the image of Elohim created him, male and female created he them. And Elohim blessed them, and Elohim said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Wow. And subdue it. Could this be done in a world created by these women of Black Lives Matters? Could they be fruitful and multiply? And he said, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. This is how we were created by Elohim. Later, the prophet wrote the following in Isaiah 8:20. He said, to the law and to the testimony, if they speak not according to this word, it's because they have no light in them. We know both what the law and the testimony are and the sources of both. Yet, have we clearly identified the trees in our lives that speak according to this word? Isn't it interesting that many still maintain that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is a regular tree, fruit tree, possibly an apple tree? The prophet said that the law and the testimony came to us by speaking. It says that they speak not according to this word. When Adam and his wife ate of the tree, Yahweh said this. Look at Genesis 3:10. Genesis 3:10 through 12. Where it says, and he said, I heard thy voice in the garden. This is Adam talking. And I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself. And he said, who told thee thou was naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree, whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? And the man said, the woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat. Shouldn't it be clear to anyone led by the Spirit of Truth that Yahweh equates the eating of this tree to hearing spoken words? This leads us to another teaching we have received over the years about there being a famine in the land. For the failure of man to listen only to those who speak the law and the testimony, it is obvious that the field of the day follows every god but Elohim. The prophet was led to write this in Isaiah 8:21. It says, and there shall pass through it hardly bestead and hungry, and it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and their Elohim and look upward. And they shall look unto the earth and behold trouble and darkness, dimness and anguish, and be driven to darkness. This is the world of modernity, full of all types of trees that outnumber the household of faith by the millions, perhaps even billions. So if we think that we are immune to the trees that have been planted in our individual spaces, we deceive ourselves. We have already been told that these have as their source the spiritual forces of darkness led by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Many brethren follow European-led congregations and have accepted all of the teachings and leaders of these congregations. Based on my experiences, many of these Sabbath-keeping organizations are teaching much of Elohim's word, and yet there are many teachings maintained in Elohim's word that they refuse to accept. One such is the fact that the prophets clearly teach that the children of Israel are scattered amongst the nations, existing in a second or third-class manner. They wield no power or great wealth in this field. In fact, many, if not all, the leaders of these groups openly support civil leaders that are clearly led by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. In fact, in modernity, the evil that is spoken by these civil leaders is overtly obvious. So, these leaders have chosen to accept certain forms of evil versus other forms. Is it any wonder that they cannot accept the true identity of the children of Israel? However, our concern this evening is each of us as individuals in the household of faith. We are told, we are commanded to take the whole armor of Elohim in order to ensure that we are not eating of the wrong tree. In fact, this is how we have this assurance. Elohim's word further includes this as we begin to wind down. Ephesians 5 and 14. Ephesians 5:14. going to read down through verse 24. 5 and 14, wherefore he said, wake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and HaMashiach shall give thee light. Are we following HaMashiach and HaMashiach alone? For if we are not, we are eating of the false doctrines from the wrong trees. Verse 15, see then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And we know his will by reading and relying on his word and his word only. Verse 18, and be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto Elohim and the Father, in the name of our Lord Yeshua HaMashiach, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of Elohim. Verse 22, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Wives, do not be like Eve. It is Elohim that established this hierarchical order of things for the species of man and woman. This we have read of from the beginning. Verse 23, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as HaMashiach is the head of the church, and he is the savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject to HaMashiach, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. We are reading and hearing of many who are defiant to this in modernity. From which trees are these teachings coming from? Now, obviously, these words are presented on a spiritual basis, but remember the duality by which Elohim created the world. Does it matter that one's husband is not walking by the spiritual commission he was given? Yes and no. Each woman of the household of faith has this as her commission for the stability of Elohim's established protocol for man. The apostle addressed this. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 13. We're going to come back to Ephesians, however. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 13 through, let's see, I think 16. He says, and the woman which hath an husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. But for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy. They're holy because someone in the household, who though they believeth not, they were pleased to dwell with you. And as a result of you, they are sanctified. And your children and else were your children unclean, but now they are holy. They are holy because somebody in the household is teaching them the word of Elohim, and the others allowing it. Obviously, there is more to this, but these words provide a basis through which peace is maintained under the order of each home that includes a member of the household of faith. Look at verse 15. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. That could be a physical departure. It could be a departing in that they are now interfering in your ability to serve Elohim. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but Elohim has called us to peace. For what knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband? Or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife? We think about Lot. We think about Abraham. We even think about Adam, who we read of tonight. Very important lesson. The essence of it all is for each of us to put Elohim first in our lives. You see, if our unbelieving husbands and wives hinder us from following truth, we know and have committed to as a result of our baptism into Yeshua, we must prayerfully stand on the word of Elohim. But we also know that Yeshua taught us that we cannot love our physical families more than we love him. But our actions must be in order. If that husband or wife agrees to live with us, and does not subvert our walk with Yahshua, we become a blessing to them, whether they know it or not, and may win them over. Ephesians 5:25 through 30. Husbands, love your wives, even as HaMashiach, Shiach, rather, also loved the church. He died for the church, gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church. All Adam had to do was straighten out his wife when she came to him with that crap, but he didn't do it. And thus, his transgression was passed on to the world. 26, that he might sanctify and cleanse it by, with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having a spot or wrinkle of such thing, but it should be holy and without blemish. Of course, if your wife is not in church, then take some patience. But how patient is Yahshua with us? So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hateth his own flesh, for she is of your flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. These words form the basis by which we eat of the tree of life. It all begins with the family, led by the husband receiving the word of Elohim by the set protocols. This is what is missing among the children of Israel in modernity. Women seeking to act like men. Men seeking to subject women to the teaching of the false prophets. And our children are running wild. We cannot save this world in itself. However, we can make a difference if we follow our spiritual commissions. We are called to glory and virtue. Let's go back to 2 Peter chapter 1. Verse 4 through 10 to close out this evening. 2 Peter 1 and 4, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these ye might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. And besides this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge. And to knowledge, temperance, and to temperance, patience, and to patience, godliness, and to godliness, brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness, charity. For if all these things be in you and abound, they make you neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord, Yeshua HaMashiach. The apostle makes the point for us. We must be morally excellent based on our knowledge. We add to these attributes temperance and patience. Temperance is the Greek word ekkratia, ekkratia, E-G-K-R-A-T-E-I-A, meaning self-control. How important is this as we seek to eat of the proper tree sources and exist in our chosen lives? We then must add godliness, which is piety and humility, and then brotherly kindness, that Philadelphia love, a brotherly love, and charity, which is agape love, the ultimate love, which that's the love that Christ had for us, the agape love, selflessness, put others before himself. The apostle makes it simple, pretty simple for us. Verse 9, but he that lacketh these things is blind and cannot see afar off and has forgotten that he was purged from his old sins. Wherefore, the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fail. If anyone of the household of faith teaches based on their own thoughts, they are impatient. They lack humility and self-control. Whatever condition we existed in when we were called, it was for the purpose of Elohim's glory and our virtue. In order for us to accomplish this, we must make sure of the trees that lead us, that speak to us, that we choose to follow. There may be times when we must assert a strong hand to those in our lives that hinder us. It is for us to follow the directions given in Elohim's word. We know that we I want to put this into, if we are following the directions given us in Elohim's word, we know we are following the correct instructions. We are following the correct trees. So, brothers and sisters, be diligent to discern the spirits and the sources from which they come into our presence. Put on the whole armor of Elohim, not just a piece here or a piece there. Love Elohim, love the brethren. Shalom. I pray that, I know I went through that pretty fast. I was trying to get through it, and I apologize for that, but I still hope and pray that there was some small message in there for each of us as we ask the question, are we sure of the tree or trees on which we're eating? We all know that regardless of where we are, regardless of what group we fellowship with, we have to discern the trees and the fruit on which we're eating of these trees. If we don't, we may find ourselves being thought of as being barren and without fruit. Because if we're sowing bad fruit, guess what? It's as if we have no fruit. And Elohim's word has proclaimed what would happen. So I hope there's some small blessing to everybody. And with that, are there any questions and or any comments from anyone tonight about the lesson? Anything you want to add to the lesson? Because you all know I do not purport to know it all. And I want to hear from all of us as the Spirit is leading you. So the floor is yours. Well, I guess I conclude one of many things. Either I bored you to death or put you to sleep. You have nothing to add to the lesson. And so we can go right to a prayer. Which is it?
I don't have any questions, but thanks for the lesson.
Did everybody hear? Michelle?
No, I didn't hear it all.
No, I didn't hear.
just no basic comment. Thank you for the lesson.
Oh, boy. Thank you, Michelle. All right. Anybody have any thoughts about anything before we close out tonight?
It's Marcia. I agree with Michelle. It was a great lesson. And, you know, as I was thinking of the title, Are We Sure of the Trees or Trees That We're Eating, you know, my mind went on to seeing these trees as our spiritual covering. You know, and then when you read that scripture early on about Adam and Eve and how when they ate of that bad tree, so to speak, and they knew that they were naked, well, yeah, they lost their spiritual covering, and so they exposed themselves to be deceived, to receive evil, and it's the same with us. You know, we're not careful. We can also expose ourselves to receive evil.
That's powerful, Marcia. That's powerful. Yeah. That's powerful stuff. Yeah. That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful.
Yeah, great lesson. Yeah. I mean, you went through a little fast, so I was soaking it up, but definitely one I want to listen to again.
Yeah, I have to admit to you that I was fighting tiredness. as I was going through it too. So I might have, I hope my voice held up doing it all. It might be because I had just eaten something before I came on board. You know, sometimes when you probably better off not eating before you do this.
mm-hmm.
but I did, and because we had a lively discussion before I started the lesson, that's why I warned y'all I was going to speed through it, but I'll have the audio version posted tonight. That's easy to do. Once everybody gets offline, it takes about 10 minutes, I think, before I'm able to post the audio onto the website. So it will be posted tonight. And then tomorrow I'll tighten up the text version. And to be honest with you, Marsha and others, I had to cut it off because I could have went in a lot of different directions with this lesson. I have not even scratched the surface on this subject. This is a subject that I actually could write a whole article on, and it is possible that I may do so, because I think it's, if we look at what's going on in the world right now, we could easily ask the question, where is the church? And I'm not talking about what we know to be the false church. I'm talking about the true church. Where is the true church? And there could be a lot of answers to that. I'm not saying that in an attack on the church. I'm just saying that the church is people, and the church is us. And so we each have to bear fruit. So how do we bear fruit? Can we bear fruit by simply being silent? Let me ask that question. Is that a fair assumption? Can the church bear fruit by being silent? That's my question.
No.
That was quick. That was quick. And I concur. It can't. But here's the sad part. Okay, I was watching something by one of the groups, and their big thing right now is trying to prove that the birthright given to the children of Israel, the 12 sons of Israel, belong to Yosef and his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who they believe to be the United States of Great Britain. That's where their concentration is these days, and in trying to make sure those people who are part of their congregation, particularly those of color, believe in what they're teaching them. That's where their concentration is. Let's look at Israel, the true Israelites. Where is their voice today? Where is their voice? Who is calling out Black Lives Matter? I mean, who is actually out there calling them out? Because I maintain this. This is what I maintain about that. And this comes after some thought. Yes, I'm going to vote on a system. But this particular group, and while I've disagreed with some in the past, particularly some Europeans in the past who challenged them, but the more I've thought about it, the more I've looked at what they're teaching and what they're all about, and then I'm looking at some of these other programs on cable TV by and for members of the children of Israel, even though they are blind to that fact. A lot of what I'm seeing amongst these groups is out to actually destroy us. Now, I'm not saying that they think that they're destroying us, but if you look at what they are presenting, like that one thing I've mentioned to you guys a few times, this pegging thing, that's the destruction of the black man. That is the utter destruction of the black man. How can I support that? How can anybody with sound reasoning support that? You all tell me.
You can't.
But yet, the church is silent. So if the church is silent, is there any reason why the world is gone in the manner that it's gone? And it's suffering the way it is suffering, and particularly our community is suffering because the true ministers are not speaking out. Where are they? When I close out and end the recording, I'll make a quick statement and share with you guys something. But so don't leave right away, but I'll share another thought with you, and this echoes what I'm saying right now, but I don't want to say it on the recording. Okay?
Okay.
Any other thoughts, people? It's your floor. Any other thoughts? Thanks for your comments, both of y'all. All of y'all, as a matter of fact. All of y'all. And I may take my time in putting the, well, I'll work on it tomorrow, but the written version, because I think I want to add a few things to it. And I made a few comments tonight that are not in my written version. Hopefully I can remember those tomorrow. But so it may take me a day or two to get this up, but I will have the audio portion up tonight. So, and if there are no more comments, well, let me just say this last call. Any comments by anybody? Thoughts by anybody to the lesson? I want to thank you for being here once again on this evening. It's a blessing to me to be here with you. Keep everybody in prayer. We heard there's a lot of information and potentially disinformation from some of the feast sites this year, like Jamaica. The word is Jamaica may have had a spike recently in corona cases. I'm hearing from some other sources that there's some disinformation out there. So, but it's having a tremendous effect on those who truly keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And you guys know, like I, you can only keep the Feast of Tabernacles if you keep the entire 8 days. I was with our sister Tyra. I did have dinner with her, and she was telling me how that she and a group in Atlanta, they get together on their own each day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and they do whatever they can to maintain the commandment to celebrate before Yahweh for 7 days, and then they do the 8th day. She had hoped to actually go away and keep it this year. The virus, of course, has impacted so many this year, even those who keep it from year to year. The virus is having an impact in causing people to come up with unique ways in order to keep Tabernacles. But she, I can tell you this, she did that, and the woman is on fire. Apparently, there is a, I don't know if you guys know, there's a Bible study that members of the Israel of God and I guess others like them keep every Sabbath around 5 o'clock. Are you all aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, apparently there's a Bible study that they keep every Friday, and Tyra's got some of them brothers, and she names some names, and you all know them all in Chicago, that they can't answer her questions, and she's challenging them. So, and to me, that's sad. Got a woman challenging them on these truths. But she's on fire, and she's got the support from her husband. The sister, I just listened to her. She is on fire for this word. So it was good talking to her, and I, of course, conveyed to her your sentiments, and she returned them to you. She should be back in Atlanta now, but yeah, the sister's on fire. We probably hung together for about 4 or 5 hours. I think I left from out her way about 11:30, something like that. So maybe it was 5 or 6 hours, right? But anyway, but yeah, I had her to send me the information to that Bible study, and I said I'd forward it on to you guys. I haven't heard back from her, but probably her getting the children all together and getting them on a plane and getting them back down there, getting them situated after a long summer. You guys may know about that, particularly you, Chris, and your kids get back from Mississippi every year. So hopefully she still will get back to me on that, and I'll get that in. Once I get it, I will forward it on to you. But feel free, either one of y'all, to inquire of sources that you have, because I'm sure people know about it, because she named quite a few names that I know. I think both of you are familiar with. I know one or two you're familiar with, but it appears that there are a lot of people on this thing. I don't know if there's a set topic or what, but the way she says she's opened up, and I ask her about it, she's, no, we just talked about this last Saturday. I said, oh, okay. She's hitting them with some thoughts and questioning why they're doing this and why they're doing that, and she told me about some of the excuses that they're making. But anyway, I'm going to close this out with the Lord's Prayer right quick. I was going to, trying to think what was my thoughts when I said I was going to make a statement to you. I've actually forgotten the thought, so when it comes back to me, I'll share it with you. So if there's no further comments, I forgot what my thoughts were, but I'll think about it once everybody's off the line, right? Anyway, let us close up. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'll make a comment after we do the Lord's Prayer.
Okay. Well, let us do that. Let us close our eyes and let us pray to our Father, which is in heaven. So, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth or in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. So be it. Thanks, everybody, and have a blessed Sabbath on tomorrow, and have a blessed week as you go to your place of employment next week.